Well, hello there. Welcome to North Shore Sports Night on this beautiful, beautiful mid-April spring day, Marathon Monday. It's also Patriots Day. Patriots Day is the 19th, but is today Patriots Day also?
It's a celebration.
Okay, well, anyway. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell, also pitching in, as he always does on Monday night, the voice of the North Shore. And Bill has got an update for us from the marathon. We actually have a marathon finisher today. And I think that's quite an accomplishment. No records today, though, Coach.
They were lucky to be moving today.
You think?
You know, they were lucky they weren't going backwards.
I know. That's
it probably would have been, there would have been a record time if they had started at Boylston Street.
Go the other way.
And gone back.
Oh, yeah.
Because they'd have had a tailwind instead of a headwind.
Why didn't they think of that? That's not a bad idea. miserable conditions for the marathon. But I know, I remember one time they called it off, I guess, since I've been in Massachusetts. But those guys are something else, and they did it. An American winner in the women's side, and that was pretty cool. We have a full lineup tonight, a really big shoe that's going to be tinged with some sadness, of course. We will be talking about former Swampscott coach and former Danvers athletic director Dick Lynch, who passed away. Of course, everybody knows Mike Lynch. Everybody knows that Mike is Dick Lynch's son. That's how it started. Now everybody knows that Dick is Mike Lynch's dad. That's pretty cool. But Dick passed away after being in not the best health for a while. And I have a story about that I'll pass along later on. And we send our sympathies along to the family. It sounds like he had a good, long, full life, and he certainly touched a lot of people in a good way here on the North Shore. Dick Lynch was the first athletic director who talked to me when I first was hired at WESX. Dick was the first AD that I met.
You know,
a very nice man.
Oh, yeah, he goes back such a long, long way. My first interaction with him wasn't direct, it was indirect. My senior year at Dom Savio, we scrimmaged Swampscott High School, coached by Dick Lynch, and featuring Mike and a lot of great Swampscott athletes. And we scrimmaged them at Savio in preparation for the state tournament, as it used to be called.
Yeah.
And
that was the old tech tourney, wasn't it?
Yeah, tech tourney.
Yeah.
And what a contest that was. Holy Moses. But it was that was the first time that I actually came into contact with him and again met him. And met him numerous times again throughout the years, and several times, of course, connected with MSO as well. So again, my deepest along with yours and Bill's condolences to Mike and his family, to Mrs. Lynch, to celebrate the great contributions of Dick Lynch that he made over the years in terms of youth sports and the impact that he had on so many, not only young men but older men now.
Absolutely.
As there'll be a lot of people looking back.
He's one of the legends, Tim, that I really, I'm just so impressed with. Like, when I first started teaching at Gloucester High School, there were so many academicians there that I looked up to, and they were just amazing. Same way with the coaching fraternity when I moved in to WESX so many years ago while I was still teaching at Gloucester High School. And Bill came on board shortly thereafter, 1979 that was. And not Dick Lynch. I look at Dick Lynch. Bill Hamer, who became an AD after coaching football. Bill over at Beverly. Tom Kulovich. We still see Tom going to high school football games in the fall. He was a coach and AD at Marblehead. Frank DeFelice, and it just goes on and on and on. We will talk with Steve Krause, I'm hoping, later on in the program as well. Steve wrote an article today on Dick Lynch. And John Squires will be our guest later on. John is an MSO sports analyst, and he will bring along his recollections of Dick Lynch as well. So, also, we'll be talking to Gary Larrabee. And Gary, a lot of connections with Dick Lynch, knows Dick very well. So Gary will pass along his thoughts, too. And I think it's totally appropriate again now. One of the real sports legends on the North Shore, just an incredible, incredible career. We will talk first with Andrew Carboni, who was the son of Andy Carboni. Of course, Andy is familiar to our MSO visitors as the baseball insider here on MSO News Sports, and his son is a senior pitcher at Colby Sawyer College. So we will chat with Andrew, who went to high school at Linfield High School, and we'll also check in with Bob Boyce,
Of course.
Danvers High School, I think they're off to, what, 3-0 already?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think anybody played today, although there was a tennis match. I'll see if I can find that. I've got that in my email. I believe it was Hamilton Wenham played today, and I think they lost, but their number one singles player continues to win. This is Hamilton Wenham girls, and I'll see if I can find that story. They played indoors today, so they were able to get their match in.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think you could. I just don't think it's possible to play tennis in this weather.
To play over Manchester?
I don't know where they were. Let's see if I can find the let's see if I can find it online. We got hold on 1 second here, and it's right here. Nope, it's not right here. It's right. Where did it go? Hold on. Nobody leave the room. Oh, here it is. Yep, at Bass River. So that must be in Amesbury.
No, that's the one in Beverly.
Oh, it is in Beverly. Okay.
Yeah, so you're right.
So Hamilton won a match played indoors. This is from Judy Hoyle, the Hamilton Wenham girls coach. They played this morning at 9:30. They lost 2-3. 3 for Amesbury, two wins for Hamilton Wenham. Number two singles, Neil Coos and O'Neill, excuse me, Neil Coos, I'm sorry. And number three singles, Elisa Voss, both played marathon matches. Very fitting for Marathon Monday, according to Judy Hoyle. Nell fought a hard, fell in a hard-fought match against Alexa Vitiglio. Elisa Voss won her battle versus Bella Ferrara. Both great matches and extremely long. Ella Provost is undefeated so far. She won her fourth number one singles match this season. Doubles played some great points. Number one and number two fell to Amesbury. The names and scores we have. We'll see if we can post those later on. So thanks to Coach Judy Hoyle, Hamilton Wenham varsity girls tennis coach, as Amesbury won their match in a marathon today, 3-2. What are you doing? Are you playing with your new toy?
No, this is an old toy.
Bring the microphone down.
It's an old toy.
There you go. No wonder I couldn't hear
I'm just trying to...
Okay. All right, well, be that way. We're going to we'll take a break.
Okay.
And a couple of things to pass along, though. Right now in Boston, great time to be a pro sports fan in Boston. Interestingly enough, Nitwit Radio, and Shaughnessy doesn't call it Nitwit Radio anymore.
Because he's
part of it. But Nitwit Radio, they keep bringing up Gronk. And what's his name? Brady.
Yeah.
About TB12. And they bring that up every single day, Coach, because I go flipping by on the dial real fast. So then I turn it off with all this great stuff that's going on. You got your Bruins, who are just playing fantastic. Pastrnak, I think he's got 9 points in two games. The Celtics, a very entertaining game yesterday. Just a terrific win for them. And what can you say about the Red Sox, Coach?
You can't.
No, I mean, you don't want them.
13-2, and, you know, they fell behind in the first inning yesterday. Like, yeah, okay, fine, no problem. You know, it's no big deal if they fall behind a little, because it's kind of like the Patriots. They can go down by, 7, 10, 14, you go, all right, now you've really pissed them off. Now they're going to start scoring some points, and they're going to embarrass you. You're not going to get any more. You know, they've given up the 14 they give up. Now they're going to score 35 on you, and they normally would go about and do that. And it's kind of the expectation you have with these current Red Sox. These guys, they're hitting up and down the lineup. Hanley looks totally rejuvenated. After a slow stop, Benintendi is starting to heat up.
Yeah, he's got to grow his hair. And Samson got his hair cut.
Yeah, and I was a little afraid of that. I was thinking, maybe he's got to let that grow back out. Then he started hitting, and I said, no, keep it short.
No. He'll get better. He'll get stronger, and it's going
to
grow.
I hope that happens to me.
So do I. What I'm looking at is I'm not used to it.
That's a little short. I told him to do it that way. I said, you're lucky I didn't get it buzz cut.
All right, Coach, we need to take a break, then we'll check in with Andrew Carboni. You are listening to North Shore Sports Night. Hello, one and all. Hello, Ben Goodhue. Amazing stuff on social media this week. Congratulations, Ben. That was incredible stuff. And what else do we have? So we'll come back. Is that too loud? We'll come back with our first interview. Andrew Carboni, who is pitching for Colby Sawyer, somewhere up in Maine. Where's Colby Sawyer, do you know? You don't. All right,
no.
We'll ask him. We'll figure it out. All right, we'll be right back.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at
a Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our three locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Stronger, faster, tougher. When you need the MVP of community banks, look no further than the Institution for Savings, with 14 full-service offices throughout the North Shore. We have MVP rates and an all-star team to serve you. Bank from the ball field with our 24/7 online application apps, internet banking, mobile deposit, and more. Institution for Savings, your winning team. Visit institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back now with
back until like later in the week too. So I don't know. We're supposed to play games on Wednesday. I don't think it's going to happen.
All right, we're back with Andrew Carboni. That is Andrew, and Andrew, of course, the son of Andy Carboni, a contributor here on MSNO Sports. Plus, I used to work with Andy at WESX. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
We're good. We're trying to figure out where Colby Sawyer is. Where is it?
We're up in New London, New Hampshire.
Say it again.
New London, New Hampshire.
New London, New Hampshire.
All right, now what's that near?
You got to help me out.
What's that near to it, but as a reference point?
Like Dartmouth College area type up here.
All right, is it north?
There's not a lot around us.
Just north of Concord?
Yes.
Okay, all right, I got it. Got a reference now. I thought it was up in Maine somewhere. All right, so playing baseball in the spring, you guys and lacrosse players just cracked me up on how you do that. But, Andrew, this is your fourth year now at Colby Sawyer?
Yep.
Okay. So let's go back a little bit. Linfield High School, you played there. What was the highlight from your high school career there before we get to your college career?
Well, I got to be a part of three Cal League championships down in Linfield. That was a great time. Always in the playoffs in the Mass State play-in at a tournament. So that was really fun. So high school was a lot of success. Good baseball down there.
All right. Now, the change when you get to college, I'm guessing in the training facilities has got to be a little bit different, yes?
Yeah, definitely. We do a lot of our training here in the gym. We have a drop-down batting cage. We have portable mounds. A lot of things are done indoors because we practice a lot in the winter, of course, indoors here. So some schools down south more, maybe even in the Mass region, can get outside more. And they're more benefited from that.
Yeah. Well, you bet now.
We played our season so early in spring, and the weather up here is always not as nice.
Yeah, it's gross. Now, tell me a little bit about how the season's gone so far. Are you strictly relieving?
Yes, I've gotten into 8 games. Right now, we're 3-15, which isn't very good compared to our last 2 years. We got 11 wins my sophomore year, 19 junior year, so we were a little better. We lost a lot of key players last year, and so this year we didn't have a good Florida trip. We went 2-8. We got back up here, and we haven't been playing very often. We've been stuck in the gym. Games are getting postponed. And we had the worst, biggest strength of schedule so far in our tournament. So it hasn't been the easiest start for us, but we have some more teams that are about our playing level coming up. So hopefully once we get those in, we're going to improve our record.
How many games?
To get into fourth place. That's what the playoffs cutoff is.
Okay, how many games scheduled? How many games you guys play?
We play 24 conference. We've played 6 so far.
Okay. All right, so what's the challenge for you now, Andrew? I mean, it's your senior year, and what are you looking forward to this year in terms of pitching out there? Obviously, you guys want to play better, but do you go in and what's your role? Tell me about that first of all.
So I'm kind of like the everyday Eddie out of the bullpen. Almost every game I can go into game one or two of the doubleheaders. I'm usually the first arm out of the pen when the games are close. So I really like that. Every day I go to the field knowing I can be a part of the game in some big spots. So that's been exciting. I did want to be a starter when I came in this year, so it was my senior year. But I do like my role a lot because I feel like, I'm a big part of the team. I'm in on the action a lot. So I've been enjoying it. I found some success on the mound this year, which has been nice. Earlier in my college career, I'd start a couple games here and there. but I've been, I think I'll surpass my innings max this year if I keep going in at this rate, which will be nice.
Excellent.
You know, Andrew, I played college ball at Salem State, and certainly, you know, it was several decades ago, and the available training facilities that you guys have today is just so far from what we did. I remember my senior year, we finally got to go to Florida for a week and train. We thought that was, you know, that was just the best thing. But now most colleges around here, they do it every single year, and they're gone for more than a week.
Yeah, we went down there for a week. We've done it all 4 years. That week is so fun. It's the best. It's just nice weather and baseball, especially where we are up here in Colby Sawyer. It's really nice to get away and go to Florida. So it's been a blast playing college baseball.
You know, one of the things that has to be difficult when you come back from the South, you get in a groove of being able to play every day and play extended time. You come back home, and all of a sudden, you hit the New England weather, especially up in New Hampshire. You know, if we got 3 inches, you guys got 13 over this past winter. That really has to disrupt that momentum that you build and the cohesiveness that you build during that Florida stay.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough to keep things going. I think the hitters have suffered with it the most. They don't get to see the live arms all the time and stay in their groove. So that's been tough. As a pitcher, it's given me a chance to rest my arm on these long waits between games, which has been nice. But I can definitely see the hitting isn't, that's where the guys are struggling.
As a reliever, you know, if I'm a bench player, and I was a bench player in junior college, and I don't really have to pay attention, you know, until I'm ready to go in, I don't really have to pay attention to what's going on out there. You do, but I'm not, you know, I'm not really invested in it. But as a relief pitcher, do you find that you really have to pay attention all the time?
Oh yeah, I'm always in the dugout. We have this iPad that there's an app and you take score on it, so I'm always doing that before I get the call to warm up. I want to know what's going on, trends of what we've been doing with certain hitters. So I pay attention to all that stuff. So I always have to have my head in the game, so I never know what I'm going to go in.
What's your best pitch?
My two-seam fastball inside, it moves a lot. I get a lot of ground balls and just like weak contact on that. So that's been big.
Do you get frustrated when you watch Joe Kelly throw 100 miles an hour and the ball is flat as a pancake?
All the time. Absolutely, all the time. Joe Kelly gets under my skin when I watch him pitch.
Oh, you just think with that kind of speed, the ball should be hopping like a knuckleball, you know?
But it also all depends on, as Andrew, you know, it all depends upon the grip you're using. Is he throwing a two-seam, or is he throwing more of a four-seam fastball? Because a four-seam fastball will have more giddy-up on it, and he's trying to overpower people.
Yeah. Andrew, what's your major?
Business administration, accounting and finance.
Would you be getting through this year?
Yes, I'm going to be graduating on May 5th.
All right, and how's the placement? Do you have a placement program there? Have you done an internship or anything? Any job offers?
I did an internship at Hertz Rent-A-Car, which is, you know, fine. It was nice. I got through it.
Mm-hmm.
right now, I'm obviously looking for a job. It's been kind of tough being up here. I want to find a job down near home, down in the Boston area.
Yeah.
Excellent. So, you know, once college baseball is over, once I get home,
cool,
I'm going to start looking around and, you know, find something that I want to do with my career. So I feel like Colby Sawyer has put me in a good spot. Mm-hmm. Where I've not only got to have a good time playing baseball, but I also had to, you know, study, and I've definitely learned a lot in my time here.
Has your dad been able to get up to see any games?
Oh, yeah, he comes to, like, every single game.
Excellent. All right, final one more question.
He doesn't mention in the news at all. How come, you know, he's not doing more promoting of you?
Colby Sawyer.
I don't know.
Well, he is, because he got you on our show, and I'm really happy about that.
Yeah.
Andrew, final question for me. What has been the, you've said a couple of times, I'm so glad to hear it, you said how much fun you're having playing baseball up there. And what's been the thing that, you know, if you look back and a few years from now or go to a 10-year reunion, what's the thing that's going to pop out in your head most about playing baseball for Colby Sawyer?
I just think if I could say the whole experience in one, my grade, we had 15, 14 kids come in as freshmen, a lot of us. So there's a lot of memories to be had throughout our 4 years, a lot of, like, specific in-game things that were, you know, funny with our coach, or just the whole experience of going through college. Like, I made some really good friendships here. Like, obviously, I'll be going to talk to them the rest of my life, go to the reunions. We'll always have good stories to tell about Colby Sawyer baseball. We did have some good times. We had some big wins. We're still trying to make our first playoff appearance in my 4 years. So if we can pull that off this year, it'd be awesome.
Have you go.
if we don't, it is what it is. We, you know, we had a good time. We competed.
Have you got a memory of one teammate who bailed you out on defense?
My most fondest memory was actually my sophomore year. On a bunt pop-up, I crashed into my first baseman, and I tore up my knee, and he caught the ball. And he's like a big kid, 6'5", and I'm not obviously that big. So he trucked me. I looked like I got hit by a car. He caught the ball and didn't move, and I was like, thanks, dude. Second and third, like sixth inning, big relief spot. So I was happy. That was my most fond memory. I thought that was just funny, but also like a big play.
Did he even know that you ran into him with that size difference?
Probably not, yeah. I killed the truck.
That's funny. Oh, that's great. Hey, Andrew, keep in touch, and we'll talk to Dad and see if we can get a hold of you again before it's all over.
Cool, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Ah, same here. Congratulations. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thanks, Andrew.
Andrew Carboni, who is the son of Andy Carboni, of course, a contributor here on MSO News Sports. Andrew works, I believe, at several radio stations. I believe he works at 104.9, North Shore 104.9. Used to engineer the Red Sox games over there in Beverly, but I don't think they're carrying Red Sox games anymore. Anyway, we need to take a quick break, and we'll come back and check in with Bob Boyce. He's the assistant baseball coach over at Danvers High School. And, of course, the Falcons already off to a 3-0 start. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with Bob Boyce, a regular contributor here as well on MSO. We really appreciate it. And Coach, 3-0, great start for Danvers.
Yeah, the kid, we've been beneficial of the schedule and some decent weather. It doesn't look good out there today or tomorrow or maybe even the next day, but kids are playing well. Just typical Danvers baseball, take what they get and move on to the next day. Big one on Wednesday, but we're not really worried about Wednesday yet till we get past a really good Medford team, hopefully play tomorrow.
You know, Bob, the weather in New England, and we see it every year, and we talk about it every year, can really wreak havoc with the team's momentum. We were just talking to young Andrew Carbone, Andy Carbone's son, up at Colby, and he said, you know, they came back from their Florida trip, and the weather was horrible, and they've had a number of cancellations due to cold and unplayable fields, and it's really impacted the front end of the season for them. How do you guys try to get beyond that?
I'm sorry, I missed that whole thing, Jimmy. I apologize.
Oh, sure. You didn't miss anything, Bob.
I heard you say something about talking to Andy, then I started to cough, and I put my phone down.
Okay.
He
was talking about how the winter weather has impacted their start and their success this season. They went down south, got it going a little bit. They came back north, all these cancellations, can't get out on the field. Hitters aren't seeing live pitching, and it's really impacted. How do you guys deal with that on the high school level?
Well, we're fortunate over in Danvers because we have the access to the field house, which is, we have three basketball courts all in one building, so we can use that, set up as two diamonds. We also have a smaller gym, which we can also use. And believe it or not, the football field being turf has really helped us a lot when we finally can get on it. And it's just about picking your spots to practice. We find ourselves practicing at some of the weirdest hours, but you have to do what you have to do to stay sharp. The biggest thing is mentally, is just staying focused and paying attention to detail, what you have to do when and if you get a chance to be on a field.
Yeah, I know that Brian LaFada of Gloucester has the kids go up the Legends. So certainly that's an imposition to both the players and sometimes the parents that have to get their kids up to Middleton from Gloucester. And again, he has to work around the availability of the facilities.
Well, first of all, there's no boat directly from Gloucester to Middleton, so that is a big imposition to people. Like I said, it's typical baseball weather, actually any sport weather in New England is this, that you have to be flexible and you have to play the rain and or this year's snow game.
Bob, what are you pleased with so far early season? What are you pleased with about the kids?
It's the kids, 7, 8, 9 hitters who are unproven seniors, who we were really nervous when we have 6 varsity starters back. As you know, you need 9, sometimes 10 varsity players to step up and play together. And we just didn't know who was going to be our 7, 8, 9 hitters. And, you know, Matt King playing third, Grady Chan out in left field, and Nicky Maraglio have been our DH, have been an absolute pleasant surprise. We're getting hits from them, and as well as the other kids, but it's nice to have 9 guys who can hit all at once, and it's been perfect for us.
Well, certainly, you know, you guys have put up some big run totals so far in the season, only matched by the offensive output of Beverly so far. They've been averaging like 12 runs a game.
Beverly's going to be a tough game for us on Wednesday, but like I said, we're not looking forward to them at all. We have to get by a Medford team, which no-hit Gloucester right off the bat. So if you can you're throwing a no-hitter in April anywhere, is a great accomplishment, and you have to be pretty good to do it. I don't care what level it is, whether it be farm leagues or the professionals. Throw a no-hitter at any level is a great accomplishment. So we're going to have our hands full tomorrow.
Well, just on the side, on Wednesday, Bill Rick and I will be in the booth broadcasting the game.
I had heard that Bill was down the other day attempting to get a roster for me, which I totally failed to bring him, and I do apologize for that. And he probably will never let me hear the end of it.
Well, you can email either him or I with the roster.
He's got it now to me.
Okay.
Roger got it to him finally to bail me out. Speaking of Roger, and it's my condolences go out to Mike Lynch and his family. And the people in Davis will be singing Dick's praises forever because Dick Lynch was the one that hired Roger back in '87, and as they say, the rest is history. So that's the big thing with Dick Lynch in our program. But Dick was the athletic director when I was in school, and it's such a big loss in the athletic community, not just in Swampscott but the North Shore in itself.
You're right; it's the whole North Shore that loses a great one. You're right, Bob. Well, Bob, stay warm, stay dry, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
All right, boys. I hope we do see you on Wednesday. I appreciate it again. Once again, thanks again for having me, and we'll talk to you soon.
Very good, Coach. Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
That is Bob Boyce, who is the assistant coach over at Danvers High School, and I was just thinking of when Dick Lynch was at Danvers High School, Ernie Smith was over there, too. Ernie later became a football coach over in Beverly, I believe. No, that was, I think so. Not Beverly, excuse me, Marblehead. But Ernie was over there, and all of the great coaches. I didn't realize that Dick had hired Roger Day. And pretty amazing stuff, pretty amazing stuff. Okay, we'll take a break. Who's next on the agenda? Gary Larrabee will be on next. Gary, we'll have some memories of Dick Lynch as well, and probably an item of golf or two. We'll check in with that. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, the voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell. Right after this break, Bill is going to talk with Jerry Parasella, Massachusetts State Representative and marathon runner who finished the race today. We'll be right back.
Ever wish that help with your business was as nearby as your next-door neighbor? At Cape Ann Savings Bank, we're the folks who have helped our neighbors build prosperous communities since 1846. And we invite you to give us a call, discuss your vision, and learn how we can help you grow your business. We're here for you. You have questions. We have answers. Just give us a call, 888-283-CASB, or visit capeandsavingsbank.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Beverly State Representative Jerry Parasella ran in his first Boston Marathon today, and whoa, those conditions, unbelievable. Jerry, how did you do?
Well, I got to tell you, seeing that finish line was one of the greatest feelings. It was a really tough day out there. It was strong winds, really heavy rain, flooded streets. So, man, to make it through that, it was a challenge. Probably didn't have the time that I'd hoped for, but, I was really happy to finish. I finished in about 4 hours and 49 minutes. So, considering all the circumstances, and it was my first marathon, it felt pretty good.
No, absolutely. That's terrific. And with the headwinds, too, that must have been very impactful to run in against.
No question. There were times that, you know, you're struggling just to get going, and then all of a sudden you get whacked with some of these headwinds and these really heavy downpours. And I'll tell you, Heartbreak Hill, and it lived up to its name today.
Wow. Now, what about your body? I got to ask you, because of the cold, the rain, I mean, there's just so many conflicting things happening to stress it. What was kind of the worst part physically for you?
It rained from the start to the finish, and there was not much of a let up, you know? So, I mean, just trying to stay warm, and my feet were soaked, so it felt like I was running with, you know, few extra pounds on my feet, and pants were soaked, and so it's hard to do anything to get comfortable, so you're just doing your best to slog through it, you know. It was one of those days.
Yeah.
I've talked to a few folks who run many marathons, and they said that this was probably the worst one they've ever done, so I guess I picked a beauty for my first.
Yeah, you absolutely, yeah, your first one. As Shalane Flanagan said, worst running conditions that she's ever run in. I saw that today, too. So, yeah, you're right on that. Well, Jerry, we're glad you survived, to be honest with you, after this. So many people did not finish the race or did not even start the race, from what I understand, because of the conditions. So congratulations.
Yeah.
Anything else, Jerry, to share with us?
I was committed. There were definitely some times when I was having some doubts, but at the end of the day, I said, you know what, I'm here. I really want to finish this. And I done fundraising too for a good group, so I wanted to make sure that I got through it. So happy I did.
Well, Jerry, from us, congratulations. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully you have a very nice day tomorrow and the next day as well.
You got it. Thanks.
You got it. Stay warm. Jerry Parasella with us following the Boston Marathon.
All right, thank you very much, Bill, and we're back now live. Bill Newell talking with Representative Jerry Parasella, who did make it through the marathon, but he sounded exhausted in that interview, and I can't imagine why. Gary Larrabee's on board now, and Gary, welcome, and I do want to start. I know that, you know, we always talk golf, and we will, but we were just talking with Bob Boyce and others about Dick Lynch, and Dick was the first athletic director who actually I met in my very first year at WESX. When I first went there, he was the first guy I met. And my memory of that is just remembering what a nice man, what a nice guy.
He was, and he could be serious, but he loved to have a laugh. And, you know, his really primary mission in life was to raise young people and help them become good people in life, you know, young adults, student-athletes, and we were fortunate enough to have him in the town of Danvers for several years, you know, first as the head basketball coach at St. John's Prep way back in the late 50s and early 60s, and then, of course, he went back to Swampscott and became a legend there, and really a legend in the area, not just in Swampscott. And then, of course, he came back to become the Demas High Athletic Director, succeeding Ernie Smith, and left a wonderful legacy in Demas. He ran a great system for athletic department for 10 years, and you know, we appreciated him ever more as we observed him in Demas, and he's one of a kind, and in so many ways, and I was proud and privileged to have known him in several different levels over the years. The first time, unfortunately, was 1967, around February 12th or thereabouts. My Demas High basketball team went over to Swampscott to play for the Northeastern Conference Championship the last week of the season. We were snowed out on Tuesday of that week. We played Wednesday, and we were sitting pretty, beating Dick Lynch and Bob and Dick Duran by 6 points with 2.5 minutes to go, and lo and behold, they beat us 55-54.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Ooh, well, a couple of big names there with the Duran boys. Oh, my God. You know, Gary, the one memory I have of Dick, aside from that very first one, is the last one, and I didn't even see him. Several years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, I believe his grandson was playing hockey for Marblehead High School, and Mike Lynch was in the stands at Salem State. Mike came over to me and asked how he could tell his father how to get the game. He thought we were on radio, and I told him how to get it online. So he picked up the phone, called his dad, called Dick Lynch, because Dick couldn't make the game, and he listened to MSO News Sports broadcast that Marblehead game. And I guess, so he was in his late 80s at that point, and it's sort of like us, I guess, Gary, is that you know, the area of sports, it keeps the little boy in us going, I think.
I think it really does, and it keeps us energized in many ways, mentally and physically, and it certainly did for Dick and his wife, last time I actually saw Dick and Joanne, I believe it is, was at a wake, of all places, over in Lynn, a wake for Peter Dalton, another Swampscott boy who made good. And this is probably 2-3 years ago, and Dick had as much energy then as he did when he was coaching the Big Blue to that crushing defeat of Danvers High Falcons in 1967. So I think you're right, Rick, and we who are involved with sports keeps us going forever.
Well, you think about it too, Gary, and we'll get to golf as soon as you want, but you think about right now, you're smiling about a memory you had when you were absolutely crushed as a kid. So it's just amazing how this thing comes around.
Sure, I didn't know, lo and behold, how would I know that, you know, 15 years later.
Sure.
Or actually not even that, 10 years later, I would be covering some Swampscott High football games against Salem or wherever, and it was still Stan Bondilevich and Dick Lynch and Frankie Felice.
Yep.
They were an extraordinary coaching combination. And, of course, everyone said over the years that Bondi was a great motivator, but Lynch was the real guy who coached that team. that Dick Lynch was the real brains behind the success of those powerhouses and unbeatens and long winning streaks and unbeaten streaks and... I believe that to this day.
Well, and the other thing too, Gary, is as you know from being a reporter, is how many young men, you know, in high school that he guided one way or another, and it's just a great legacy.
In the hundreds, probably in the thousands, and his family, of course, and all of his friends can be proud of that, and I'm sure that's the proudest aspect of Dick's.
Mm-hmm.
Dick's career, and we're grateful for it.
Absolutely. Do we have golf? Because Tim has been scrolling through. He's been scrolling through his tablet here since when we got here, and he's looking up golf stuff. So what's on the agenda?
Well, I want to. Go ahead, Gary.
Go ahead, Tim. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
What I was going to mention was that the Heritage was played this past weekend, and interesting, certainly a result. As the winner is someone who was way down on the ranking list, but played himself onto a ticket to the tour.
Well, yeah, yes, Satoshi Kodara, I guess, won. Phil, I've never heard of, quite frankly, and never noticed his name until this weekend. And lo and behold, he came out of nowhere to many of us and won the Heritage with a cool $1.2 million.
Oof.
And look who came in second, Siwoo Kim, who won last year's Tournament Players Championship. So those Asian guys have certainly got some game in this. And there's Matsuyama's out there. That's another big-time player. And who knows how much impact they will have on the tour the rest of this year. But those two guys who finished 1-2 yesterday made us take notice that they will, I would think, be very prominent fixtures in contention in future weeks. And that's what we have to deal with too, the Asians as well as the Irish and the Spaniards and the Australians, and my goodness, we American players have a lot of work in front of us.
Well, you know, I was just thinking as you begin to make that comment about the two Japanese players making an impact, and I kept thinking about that, you know, back when we were younger, all the names you heard on the course were all American, and the it was the odd golfer who was from Europe or from Mexico. Lee Trevino, I think, was one of the first like Tex-Mex golfers that you would have thought as a non almost well, he was American but a non American, and all of a sudden the tour is just infused with this global nature.
Well, it's been happening, gradually happening for a long time, but never to the extent that it is now, as you're correct. But, of course, you know, we had Japanese guys who were playing pretty good back in the 70s, Jumbo, Joe Ozaki, and mm-hmm. I can't remember any other guys, but there were always a few of them out there who were threatening to make an impression and make a major impact, and sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. But none of them have risen, you know, to the level of player of the year or a multiple major champion. And we'll see if Kim seems to be the most likely one right now, Kim or Matsuyama. But here we have Kodera, who won yesterday. Before we finish talking about just a little about golf, but she also mentioned that Dick Lynch was in a bad Tedesco Invitation four-ball guest when he did a little bit of golf, and he could throw in that occasional very timely birdie or par, net or gross or otherwise, and be a very good player in that Tedesco four-ball every once in a while.
Well, you know, you didn't tell us last week when you went over the Masters story, the fact that you tried to crash the Masters and then that you actually got to play the Masters course, Augusta, that's pretty cool. And the other thing that stood out for me, Gary, in the article on Friday, your piece on Friday, was when you saw all those private jets when you landed. That conjured quite an image.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what the traffic jam is like at that airfield nowadays. But you know, thankfully, word never got to the press building or to the folks who ran those activities for the riders about me trying to drive down Magnolia Lane that very first time, where I probably wouldn't have been allowed to play that following Monday. Thankfully, man, never heard about that.
I guess that's a good thing. That was most entertaining. Gary, what else you got here? We got to go. We got to move along here. But what else you got?
Well, I think on the social calendar, I'm sure Tim is aware of this because he's always agreed with me that Paula Creamer was a very hot-playing LPGA player, but she just had a story in one of the magazines. I'm not sure which one of the national magazines it was, but she was talking about her marriage, and of course, lo and behold, in the last couple of weeks, her marriage has ended.
Oh, geez.
Bad timing by the magazine, and
wow.
Paul is now available, Tim, if you're interested in inquiring about her availability.
Somehow I'm not sure my wife would look favorably upon that.
We don't have to worry about that one, Gary. It's not going to make the tabloids.
Well, that's the biggest news I've got on the professional golfing social circuit.
Okay.
I don't know what else is going on out there, but it's a little bit of a relaxing time, a little bit of a break in the action. Although they're playing every week, but we get the TPC Championship coming up, the Tournament Players Championship next month. And then, of course, the U.S. Open in June, so we've got a little bit of a leg in the action. But every week at a big tournament when you can win $1 million on tour, and I wonder who will be winning this week. I don't know if we'll have anybody as unknown as Kodera winning this coming weekend, but boy, I'll tell you, as we've been reminded, these guys come out of nowhere. You don't know how good they are, and all of a sudden they have a big week, and they're a topic of major conversation.
Well, we'll see who we talk about next week. If you're available, we'll be calling.
I'll be available, guys, and we'll have someone of a Rockport nature to talk about who's been away from the area for a long time, but we're going to let people know this week what this fellow's been doing for many, many years as a PGA professional. Long gone from the area, it's been from KPN. We'll talk about him on Monday.
All right. Thank you very much, Gary, and we'll look forward to seeing the article in the Salem News on Friday.
Get up straight, guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Gary.
That is Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer. His columns every Friday in the Salem News, and they're reprinted on Saturday in the Gloucester Daily Times. So, he told a story. He told us a story last week about his experience at the Masters. I think he did covered 7 or 8 of them. And the very first one, he tried to drive on the course and stuff with a car, and he's talking about meeting the players, and, you know, it's a great article. You can check it out in the Salem News last Friday's edition. We'll take a break, come back with John Squires, and John is going to tell us a little bit about his thoughts about Dick Lynch, the tremendous sports icon here on the North Shore who passed away, I believe it was yesterday, at the age of 91. We'll be right back.
He coached everything in high school.
Yeah.
He was unbelievable.
All those guys did.
Football, baseball, basketball,
yep.
Track. You know, it's wonder he didn't coach golf.
Maybe he did.
Maybe.
We'll be right back.
Fact is, including the commute, people spend 10 hours a day at work. No wonder they're forced to buy car insurance in 15 minutes. They just don't have time to go meet with someone. Well, Columbia Insurance has an alternative. The insurance professionals at Columbia Insurance Agency will meet with you at your workplace. Even better, we'll go to the registry and bring your plates back to you at work, free of charge. At Columbia Insurance Agency, we come to you, and we really do. Visit ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net and set up an appointment today. That's ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net.
Compelling exhibits, thought-provoking programs, all celebrating Lynn's past while promoting a vision for its future. I'm Drew Russo, Executive Director of the Lynn Museum and Lynn Arts, and I invite you to visit our campus located in the heart of the downtown Lynn Cultural District, with galleries at 590 Washington Street and 25 Exchange Street. Currently, we are featuring the Vision Place of Souls, Civil War landscapes by local artist Jeff Fioravanti through December 22nd at the museum, and rotating shows from local artists in the Lynn Arts Gallery. We're open Tuesdays to Fridays 10 to 4 and Saturdays 9 to 1. Visit us online at lynnmuseum.org.
The Porthole Restaurant is a North Shore dining tradition. Enjoy waterfront dining in a casual atmosphere. The Porthole features outstanding quality, quantity, and price. Known for a full variety of menu selections, you must try the award-winning clam chowder, fresh off the boat seafood, lobsters, prime rib, steaks and chops, daily luncheon and dinner specials. They feature spacious and well-appointed function rooms. The Porthole, a great value, a great dining experience. Open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week on the water on the Linway in Lynn.
Okay, we're back live once again, talking now with John Squires. John, knowledgeable about so many things here in North Shore Sports. Last time I saw you, John, I was freezing in a Marblehead football game.
That's right. Boy, time flies, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, now I'm free.
Now we're just freezing.
Oh, God almighty. It was unbelievable. Really tough weather, but it was a great football season for all of us. We had a lot of fun.
Oh, great, great. It's been a great school year, John, as you know, and I listened to your wrap-ups on hockey and on basketball this season with Bill, and we got baseball underway now, and so much to talk about, so little time. And I know that you have some fond memories of Dick Lynch as well.
Well, you know, it's a great loss for Swampscott, especially, but as in the North Shore too, as everybody that said on air tonight, you know, Dick was just a great, great person, and I happened to be lucky enough to play for him in two sports, in football and in basketball, 3 years, my sophomore, junior, senior years, and those back in the 60s and 70s. In fact, I was at that game Gary was talking about. I was on the JV team as a sophomore, and I led the freshman the year before in scoring, and Dick Durham was the only one that got brought up to the varsity as a sophomore, and Dick grabbed me before the season and said, John, you could play in our team, but you're not going to start, so I'm going to play as much as I can. And I was at that game. That was a great basketball game that Swampscott sneaked out, and incidentally, Swampscott went on to go undefeated in the conference that year, which is one of only very few teams that went undefeated in the conference in the old Northeastern Conference back in the mid-60s, late 60s.
You know, Mike made an interesting comment in the newspaper where he said, you know, when he spoke, people listened. And Dick was not a loud person, but it was through force of personality and his way of conveying the information that you just honed in on what he was saying, and you took it in, you absorbed it.
Well, you know, Timmy, Dick was a very, very unbelievable competitor. Gary talked a little bit about golf, but Dick was probably the best competitor I ever met in my life. Dick would compete in horseshoes and in checkers. He's unbelievable. And you could talk to his son Mike about this. And he taught all the kids in Swampscott that he had in the classroom as well as on the athletic fields, in the courts, competition. And he always believed that preparation was the key. And as Mike and I talked about this many times, I haven't had a chance to talk to Mike. I did send him a text last night when I found out. But he said the one thing about us is we were never out prepared. He was a key believer in preparation. We were very well prepared. Dick was very organized, and we won the games in the practice. The games were easy. Practice for him was pure torture. He was very demanding. He knew you from the time you were 10 years old. He got involved. The first time I met him, I was 11, 12 years old. He pulled me over in the CYO game and said, John, that kid's moving on you too much. You got to stop him. And he was just like that. But he always cared about people. He cared about his players, his students, and he kept a close eye on them. I mean, he was always, always very positive, but he was a tremendous winner. I remember the famous quote he said to me one time, And I talked to him and said, you know, Dick, you can't be upset about that, losing, you know. He said, John, he said, you only play the game one way, he says. And I said, you can't win them all. And he used to say, why not? And that was his model, that, and he had us prepared at every game I ever went into in basketball, football, or baseball. And people forget he was a baseball coach at Swampscott too, is that anybody before Frank DeFelice, is that anybody ever played for him always felt they were going to win every game they participated in. And we did win an awful lot over here for a long time, and it had a lot to do with him.
You know, I was telling Rick, my earliest memory of interacting with him, I was playing basketball my senior year at Don Savio in the fall of 19, actually it would have been spring of 71, winter, and we scrimmaged Swampscott before the Tech tourney. And he came in, and Mike was a senior, and Richie Moran, and Greg Beatrice. I mean, there was just a big, good squad. I think they finished second place in the conference. And that game was so intense. I mean, Jim Daugherty coaching at Savio. You had Dick on the other sideline, and it meant a lot to me because, you know, I knew who he was being from Lynn, and of course playing for Daugherty, and it's like these two guys weren't there to get a workout in. These guys were there to play the game.
You and I and Bill will appreciate this. When we went down to the Super Bowl with Bill, we spent the whole 45 minutes talking about this because we talked about Jimmy Daugherty, who was a good friend of Dick, and about Savio used to scrimmage Swampscott all the time.
Yep.
He did the same thing the year we won the Tech. And I'll tell you, that was as intense as any game you ever play in the Tech tourney. I mean, he just believed that practice is where you win games, and he was tremendous, tremendous motivator, a great person. It's a sad day in Swampscott, and it's just a great loss for the North Shore. He did an awful lot. People also forget, and I don't think anybody's brought it up yet, he helped design that field house over in Danvers. When he went over to Danvers, and he followed Ernie Smith, the first thing he did was hire Roger Day, who's a Hall of Fame coach, as we all know, and he's very proud of that. And Dick was very involved up to last year over in the old timers dinner, and he still stayed involved right up to the time he almost passed away. And he helped design that field house over in Danvers. So, I mean, and that was a great accomplishment for him. And the other thing about Dick that I want to bring out is when he got done coaching, got done with an AD, he still stayed active. He scouted baseball for the Phillies. He was a professional baseball scout. He did that. A lot of people didn't know that. And also, he followed Mike's career as he did super, and he still is super as a sportscaster. But he also followed kids around the North Shore, and he also stayed involved. He gave an award every year at Swampscott for the basketball hardest worker on the basketball varsity team. It's named after him. The gym was named after him. And I'll tell you a funny story. I talked to Mike before. He was very, very sick 4 years ago. And he's just a fighter. He's like a cat with nine lives. He was so sick many times, but he always rallied, and he always said the statement, you know, you never give up. You keep fighting right to the end. Never give up. And he couldn't walk very well going into that, and not many people know this. He has some trouble, and he was working out, and every day he worked out to get ready for that dedication. And when the gym they dedicated the name after him 4 years ago, it was almost like a shot in the arm, and he still gave us 4 more years of his generosity, his sportsmanship, his athletic expertise, and so forth. So he was a great human being, a great coach, and I was very, very lucky to be around him and play for him. He taught me an awful lot about basketball and sports, but more importantly, about life.
You know, John, it just came to me. He was one of the few people that you would meet that you would actually feel humbled when you met him. Especially if you knew him, you knew his reputation, and you met him, you felt humbled when you met him because of what his accomplishments were.
Well, you know, he was so successful, and he was very well respected in the coaching ranks, and you're right about that. He was never a person that bragged very much. He had tremendous bragging. He was a great athlete himself. I mean, I think he went to BU and played with Harry Aganis or against him. He knew of the whole bit. He played basketball 3 years at BU. He was a great baseball player, and he wasn't very big, but he was very, very humble, and the whole Lynch family's the same way. Mike's very humble. As we know, he gives so much back to high school kids, and he's very humble, but he was very demanding. He was great to play for, and you felt very confident. You felt because he always said that, you know, he really demanded expertise, and he had a knack for bringing the best and bringing everybody to the top level of their potential, which is a real feather in his cap.
Hey, John, thanks for the stories. Boy, you've had a lot of stuff I didn't know. And I thought I know some of these guys, but that's really good stuff. And let's do this more often with other stories. Maybe something a little more pleasant from time to time.
I would love to, Rick, and I want to leave you with one story. I'll tell you funny else. He was a big follower. You guys mentioned MSO. He was a big follower of MSO, and I'll tell you, he was so funny. He said to Mike, he knew that I was working with you guys. He said, how can I listen to John? How can I get on there? And we told him, and Mike told him, and I explained to him. And he used to actually call me or talk to me and give me a critique of how I was doing. I mean, he was still coaching right up to his last.
You know, John, I never had any clue that he would have listened. So that is, that's typical, though, isn't it?
It was great. And he was a coach right up to the end. And that's
excellent.
What he used to do. He says, you were okay this week, but let me tell you this and this. He's a great guy. So we'll talk again soon. Great talking to you guys. You do a great job. I listen to you all the time and hope to get together soon.
Right back at you, John. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks, John.
That is John Squires, who is an MSO sports analyst, and I had no idea that Dick Lynch would listen, and I know he did that one game. That's humbling in and of itself, I'll tell you.
He wasn't, and I can remember doing Beverly Swampscott games, and Mike and Mrs. Lynch bringing Dick up to stands. You know, and just the people coming over to see him. I mean, it was a magnet.
Well,
it's so many. Especially, you know, it's just all the old timers from Beverly. And there's a lot of old timers that go to Beverly football, and they were just it was like a veneration.
Yeah, yeah.
They came in and to kneel at the foot.
Well,
of
you
team.
Realize
he didn't feel like he was that way himself, but they all came to say. Hello.
Yeah,
it was incredible.
Yeah, and you go through life as you know you play for these guys or for him as a kid, and you might not get it at that point, but as you go along, you get it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
you see what a wonderful experience you had and how lucky you were.
Yeah, and you know, and when I was a senior in 1970-71, he was already in many people's eyes. He was already legend.
Oh yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You knew who Dick Lynch was, you know, I was a high school kid. And I went to high school out of town, but again, I played baseball every summer in town. But you knew.
Well, let me tell you,
Dick Lynch was.
I've told you the story before, and we're going to go a little long because we got to get Steve on too. I didn't know who Mike Lynch was. Okay, now I knew Dick Lynch, but I didn't know who Mike Lynch was. So when my first year at WESX in Salem, you know, I'm a summer replacement. Who's ever on vacation, I fill in for from the day school gets out till we go back to school, and then I work weekends and I work nights. The sports director left. That was Jerry Greenberg. He left in early. I think it was in September, and so we didn't have a sports director, and I couldn't do the job for many reasons. One, I wasn't good enough, but two, I was also teaching. And Bill Newell came on board a few months later, but. Mike Lynch comes in. Now, I knew Mike from basketball games. You know, he had been refereeing basketball games, and that's how I knew Mike. I didn't know he was the Mike Lynch from Harvard. I didn't know all of that. I didn't know he was Dick Lynch's son. So Mike came and applied for the sports director's job at WESX, and I'll never forget it. We're out in the parking lot after his interview, and he said, "What do you think, Rick?" And I said, "Geez, Mike, I'd love to have you. You know, that'd be awesome if you were sports director. You could." You broadcast hundreds of games, you know, get some experience, and in no time you'll be in Boston. Yeah, I'm giving Mike Lynch advice.
Yeah.
6 weeks later, he's on Channel 5 filling in for Brian Leary. Okay,
well,
there you go.
I mean, and Mike is so much like his dad, and as John said, how much Mike has done for high school sports, and Gary mentioned it as well. I had the chance to interview Mike. It was one of the Marblehead Swampscott games, and he was sitting down below, and I just yelled out.
Yeah, he's been on a few times. Yeah.
Mike, you know, could he come up and have the show?
Yep.
No problem.
Yep.
He came up several times at half times, and we did interviews, and I actually called him at home, and we did an interview.
We did an hour show with him one time here, remember?
Yeah.
And the day he was asking how his dad could listen in, I asked him if he'd come down between periods, and he did.
Yeah.
You know, I was on the floor. He was up in the stands with his family, and he came down in another legend, and it's great to have these guys. It's amazing.
In fact, the Salem Marblehead football game, the 100th playing, of course, he's there with his dad and his mom, but Steve Buckley from... The Herald.
Yep, yep.
was came into the booth, and I had just happened to have an empty seat, so I hollered down to come down and sit. I had Steve Buckley and Mike Lynch on.
There you go.
At that, after I covered that game. That was cool.
Your brush with fame.
No, I'll tell you, that was as close as I'm getting to
was,
it.
Was it on MSO?
Huh?
Was it on MSO?
I was called, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, very good.
On the old recorder.
We'll have to put that in our marketing thing, I guess. Yeah. All right, we're going to go late. We're going to call Steve Krause, and we'll be right back for our last segment. Stay tuned.
Fabulous Fridays and Sunday brunch are back at the Gloucester House. World-renowned for its lobster dishes and fresh seafood specialties, the Gloucester House Restaurant, 63 Rogers Street, uses only locally caught, fresh North Atlantic seafood, offering traditional dining as well as catering to your private function needs. There is something for everyone and every occasion at the Gloucester House. Owned and operated by the Linquata family since 1959, they offer fabulous Friday lunch and dinner specials. And don't forget Sunday brunch from 10 to 2. For more information, go to GloucesterHouse.com.
All right, we're back now with Steve Krause, the Daily Adams Sports Editor. And Steve, very inspiring story today in the item about Dick Lynch. And I know that you knew him very well.
He's a very good guy, always good to me. In our paper, you know, he was, Michael was telling me when I talked to him last night that, you know, Dick was a home body type of a guy, in that he always looked at the Lynn item as being the paper, and whenever anybody got their name in the item, that was a big deal to him. You know, you get the feeling sometimes that you know, they look at it being in the item and say, well, it's not the Globe or anything like that, but you know, Dick always looked at the item as the paper, you know. So in that sense,
how's that changed?
Very, very, very good to us.
How's that changed over the years, Steve? Because you know, I was just thinking about that when Bill and I started at WESX, and all three of us were a whole lot younger than we are now. We would see the ADs maybe once in a while if we were covering a game. And so in football, you know, we would probably talk to the ADs just once in a great while. And I remember the hardest interview of all time was Adam Adamopoulos over at Peabody High School. I know it wasn't the AD, but just an impossible interview. And when I had to go see Roy Norden, man, I was just terrified. What was it like talking to Dick?
My first really encounter with him was actually as the athletic director at Danvers High. And I don't know what the situation was. I think it might have had something to do with the fact that Mark Bavaro was on the team. And they were playing classical, and that was going to be a big game. And I wasn't even in sports at the time. But somehow or other, I ended up doing something, you know, that put me in touch with Dick Lynch. And I didn't even know it was the same Dick Lynch. I mean, I'd heard of him all through the years and everything. And, Dick Lynch, how many Dick Lynches you suppose there are in the world?
Yeah.
You know? So, I just figured it was just a guy named Dick Lynch. So I walk and I see him and I realize, hey, that's the same Dick Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
So Dick, I remember you from way back reading about you and, you know, reading about the Big Blue and, you know, what a wonderful time that must have been, you know, the usual stuff. And, you know, he was very, very gracious, very polite, very thankful, you know, that I remembered and that I spoke kindly. And, you know, it was one of those relationships. I never, ever, ever saw him that I didn't make it a point to go up to him and say hi. You know, even if it was for 30 seconds, you know how you get those people in your lives?
Yep.
That no matter what you are doing and what they're doing, no matter how much of a hurry you are in and, you know, you need to be someplace or do something. If he was around, I always made my way over to say hi to him. And so you know, when I found out last night, I was really, you know, I was happy that I had done that because, you know, you don't know, you know, when's the last time you're going to see somebody is.
Yeah.
And the last time I saw him was at the Old Timers dinner last November. He went, and actually so did Marty Goldman, you know, and they're both gone now. So, and Marty was the same kind of guy, so.
Well, I know what you mean. I saw, I hadn't seen Bill Hamer in many, many years, and Bill Newell primarily talked to Bill Hamer when we were at WESX. I didn't, because Bill was the full-timer. And one day I was at breakfast in Gloucester, and Bill Hamer was sitting with a friend of mine, and it's just as you say, I got to go over and say hi to this guy and just tell him, you know, what great fun I had watching his games. And he was of the same nature, very, very gracious and like that. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I never did see, I didn't see Dick Lynch in public at all, really. And, of course, it's, you know, in his later years, he probably didn't go to a lot of games. But some of these guys, they're out there, you know, in that generation, they're still out there kicking ass, watching games and taking notes.
Well, I just know that I call it the lethal table when I go to the Moynihan luncheon in June.
Yep.
And you know, there's Red Hot is always over there, and Geswell and
Kulovich.
The other one, Alex Kulovich. You know, they're all over there. It's the lethal table, you know, because I go over there, you know, to say hi and to pay homage or whatever.
Absolutely,
you want to call it, and I know that one of them is going to get a dig in, you know.
Yeah,
it kind of makes life fun.
Absolutely, and it's you know, like I was saying with Tim and you and me and Bill. And Alex Kulovich, you know, he goes out to Idaho or Iowa in the wintertime to go out and watch his grandson play hockey. He goes to Marblehead High School football games. It's one of the things, Steve, as we begin to mature and get some mileage on.
Speak for yourself.
Well, I'm speaking for somebody in the room. I don't know. But as we put mileage on, it's the one thing that keeps the little boy in us, though, is sports. And you know, we talk about Dick Lynch and his age, but if you talk to the man, I will bet you don't see the age. You just see that enthusiasm and that knowledge.
Well, you know, when it comes out in a guy like Lynch, you know, let's say, for example, I say to him, which we did get into this conversation once, you know, that, boy, I remember when Dick Geron followed his own shot and you guys won the Tech tourney. And, you know, and then you'll get about a 10-minute dissertation on why that's the one thing about high school basketball you can't stand is that nobody follows their own shot anymore. Everybody will take a shot and then go completely down the court and forget that there's a rebound to get, you know?
Mm.
And he said that was just textbook how you play basketball, and he says nobody does that anymore. So, I mean, and you know, the competitiveness came out that way in him, you know?
Yeah, you know, Rick and I, we've been reminiscing all night long, and there are images that are locked in your mind of a particular instance in which you interacted with Dick, and you don't see him as a 91-year-old man, but you see him. You, the face that is conjured up when you think of him is that face from that particular time.
Yeah, I mean, it's always the way, you know, it's like the same thing. I mean, Frank DeFelice is another one, you know. You see him now, and the only thing that you can see when you look at him is what he looked like and what he acted like 30 years ago, you know, as opposed to what he looks and acts like now.
Yeah.
So...
Well,
because until you shake his hand and you realize there's not that much difference.
Yeah, he's still pretty feisty.
Yes, he is.
I still remember that announcement in the room there at the Moynihan luncheon. I think it was last year when Frank Carey, Frank DeFelice, and Roger Day were all sitting at the same table, and Gerard says there's 1,500 baseball wins among the three of them. That's incredible.
Yeah, that was.
Well, that's coming up. All right, listen, Steve.
And,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, Carey's another one that part of that Lethal crowd.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a consequence of the Earth still spinning on its axis, and it's sad, but it's great to remember, and the legacy goes on. So, you know, it's one thing about this area, and I'm guessing it's probably like this all over the country, but it's a special place. The North Shore sports community is a real special place.
It is. It certainly is, Ollie.
Yes, it certainly is, Ollie. All right, Stan. We're gonna go now. Maybe we'll catch you next week, and we'll talk a little more high school sports, Steve.
All right.
Maybe some Bruins and Red Sox.
There you go.
Yeah, now he's piping up.
All right. Back to your back to your marathon stories.
Take care. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. All right. That is Steve Krause, who's the Daily Item sports editor, and that is it. We are
history
long gone and out of your history. I'm math. Long. See that book right there? I've been brushing up on it. I gotta get. Get brushed up back to Calc 3 and Calc 4. My daughter will be taking Calc 3 this summer, so I haven't seen calculus in 8 years now.
Oh.
So I'm blasting my way through the book, and it's amazing how much you can forget. Amazing. Mm. All right, Coach, any final thoughts?
Let's just hope the Red Sox. I love the new attitude of Cora with these guys at the plate. Getting aggressive early in the count when the pitcher throws a strike, get after it, you know, and they're making great contact. They're driving the ball all over the field. They got teams scrambling. Yeah, but the pitching has been as good as you could hope for at this point in the season. The Celts found a way to pull that one out yesterday. I'm not sure quite how, but they did, which could be a good sign for them because they played a lousy game. So if they play a really good game, it could be a very quick series.
What is it, of all the words of tongue and pen, these are the saddest?
Yeah.
It might have been.
It might have been. Mm. And the Bruins, scary good right now.
They're down 1-0 last count in the first. So
yeah, but they were down 1-0 the other day too. So in the last game, they were down 1-0.
No, they weren't.
Yeah,
were they?
Yeah. So don't worry about it.
I don't think so. But I worry. Okay. All right. Well, no, I'm not worried. Do I look worried? No, you're right. And I do like it. It's refreshing to see Alex Cora's personality. Granted, it's easy when you're winning.
Yeah, it is. It is. There's no pressure when you're winning. You can stand on the front steps and look and look relaxed. But at the same time, there's a mentality amongst the players that they're playing relaxed.
Well, I also like the way he...
And he's unleashed them, is what he's done.
I like the way he has been dealing with the media. There's no flies on him. There's no pretense.
Oh, no. He just tells it like it is.
Yep.
And the same thing with Cassidy with the Bruins. He's unleashed... That team has unleashed the talent. He said, go get it. Put the pucks on net and make things happen.
You know, it reminds
and
me.
And that's why they are where they are.
Reminds me what Dale Dunbar said a couple of years ago in high school hockey. Remember that? He said, I want the kids to be creative out there. You know?
And I mean, you know, this past game, the creativity with the sticks from Krejci and Pasternak, my good God. You never saw that in old Bruins team, the stick work around the net, pulling it around the goalie and flipping it behind it. Was like going, like, who are these guys?
Yeah. They got some big boys, too. That's making a difference.
And overall, they're a young team.
Yep, very young.
A young team.
All right, Coach, thank you very much, man. Appreciate you coming by. Do it again next week, I reckon?
More than likely.
Okay, sounds good. That's Tim Kearns. I'm Rick Moore, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And, of course, the voice of the North Shore is Bill Newell. Thank you, Bill, for all of your help. And for all of our guests tonight, we appreciate it. Pass the word along, North Shore Sports Night here on Monday nights. If you missed this, it'll be on demand in just a few minutes. Bye-bye.